Just a friendly reminder that the opinions expressed on this show are not worth a Canadian penny, so disregard anything you hear that might get anyone in trouble. And despite some of the great ideas you may hear, don't try them at home. Go to a friend's house instead.
It's time to get a gun. That's what I've been thinking. Well, I could afford one. And if I did just a little less drinking, time to put something between me and the sun. Get a gun.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 38 special of Slamfire Radio.
I thought it was 38 super.
38. Well, that's because you shoot Ipsic in an open, and so, of course, 38 super is all you think of.
That's
but
right.
38 special is really the more common pistol caliber that I think most of our listeners would identify with. Am I right, Doc? Doc, I'm looking at you, you revolver-shooting maniac.
He wouldn't carry 38 special.
No, he shoots 357. Anyhow, yes, welcome to episode 38 for January 4th. We're your hosts. I'm Matthew.
I'm Trevor.
I'm Owen.
And Owen's going to tell us what he did with guns this week, because that's always interesting.
Especially when he does stuff.
That's right, and I once again, I did stuff.
Sweet.
I don't know what is wrong with me. What did I do? Well, we kind of, Matthew was down this week, and we had some fun. We did, with our kind of winter camping expedition, which didn't work out like we planned, so we had a little more time to spend playing around with guns. So we took an AR apart, put one back together, sort of modified a second one.
Well, not only that, we drove halfway across the county to buy more AR parts that you could put one back together.
That's right.
Well, like what?
Well, I had my upper and lower that I bought, that NEA upper and lower, which I was planning on putting on my main rifle and replacing because the magwell was out of spec. And so I decided I was going to swap, basically all just take strip the old lower and put all the parts in the new lower. But I'm planning on doing a second build anyway, so Matthew said, well, this is kind of dumb. Why would you, maybe you should wait and get an order a parts kit and put the parts kit into the new lower to save building it twice.
Mm-hmm. But you found one?
So that kind of makes
look at me being all logical and efficient and whatnot. Some people call it laziness, but every now and then it's efficiency.
Yeah.
And so then I asked him, well, Matthew, do you have a lower parts kit that we could put in this? And he, of course, didn't. So it was kind of a useless suggestion. But I knew somebody that had a lower parts kit. And so I called him up, and yeah, no problem. He said, the only problem is it's missing a spring. So I said, well, no, that's whatever. I can order the one spring and put it in. You know, we'll just pull that one part. It was just a hammer spring. And so we drove over. We got it, came back, put it in the new lower, swapped over the stock and the upper, you know, the barrel, all the other important parts onto the new upper. So I now have a gun with a forward assist and a magwell that will hold magazines.
Yeah, without them falling out on them all by themselves.
Without them falling out by themselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, that was kind of cool. And then I did actually, David, whom some of the listeners may know.
Random Dave. New Brunswick.
Random New Brunswick Dave. He had to replace his trigger.
That's right.
On his AR, and so he had parts left over from that, and so I was able to get a hammer spring from him. So now I have my second lower. My old lower is now complete, and that build is on its way. Which reminds me, Trevor, I owe you an EMT for that handguard. The handguard.
No, that was all your Christmas present.
No. I was going to pay for the handguard.
No, I was going to sell you the stock, and the stock got sent to somebody else, a guest tonight, as a Christmas present. The handguard I was going to sell, and then I was going to sell you the stock, and then I decided to just give you the handguard as a Christmas present. So, Merry Christmas. You got a handguard for Christmas, and Jeffrey's got a stock for Christmas. Matthew got reloaded ammunition.
I got bullets.
Dude.
Hey,
sorry,
no,
dude.
No. I think I came out ahead.
Yeah, anyway, it looks great, because I kind of just put it on temporarily. Just to kind of get a guess, because it's going to be a 7.5-inch barrel.
That's short. And for our American listeners, I'm thumbing my nose and going, no $200 tax stamp for us.
And they're giving us the finger going, I can take it anywhere and carry a gun. So shit.
Yeah, I know. You guys win. I'm sorry.
Nice try.
So I and which the barrel I have on order.
Nice. Are you going with the NEA 7.5?
I am.
Are you going with the one that we saw online?
Yes.
Oh, nice.
Funny story. I went on. I didn't order it that night. The next day, I went on and hummed and hawed over it. Finally, I said, okay, I'm just going to buy it. And so I did.
Barrel. Which barrel were we talking about?
An NEA 7.5 inch barrel.
Okay, NEA. I'm sorry. I saw a squirrel. Yeah. And by that, I mean I was saying goodnight to my wife.
Right.
Carry on.
And, my bad.
And so I went on, and it was there, and I clicked on it, and I bought it, and I paid for it. And then I got the receipt in the email, and I looked at it a little closer and realized I ordered the 300 blackout barrel.
Well, that's a problem.
So I immediately emailed them and said, panic! Can you swap this out? Actually, it was Saturday, I think I did that, Saturday morning. No, that would be today, so that wasn't right. Must have been yesterday.
Yeah, today is Saturday.
And Friday afternoon. I don't know when it was. And they emailed me right back, said no problem, correction made. So
cool.
That'll be anyway. Neat.
That's going to have a – no, you got a gas tube for that too on the way?
Yep, I've got a gas tube on the way, charging handle bolts. I've got almost everything. The only thing I'm missing is a muzzle device. One-Shot Tactical had them in stock 2 days ago. And now they're out of stock on the ones
you're getting a linear muzzle brake, aren't you?
I am getting a linear muzzle brake that will fit flush or just inside of the handguard.
That is going to look wicked.
I was almost going to buy a 4.5 or a 6-inch one, so it looked like a can on the end.
But then that kind of now is no longer a 7.5-inch gun. Yeah. Now it's back to a 12-inch.
The other one.
Yeah.
Owen, did you order the pistol length gas tube?
Yes.
Okay, and you said a charging handle? Did I not give you one, or you just decided to get a different one?
No, you didn't have one in there.
Oh, I have one, and Matthew, remember the 22 kit?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Hey, remember the Glock sight adjustment tools you're going to send for Owen?
Don't even start with me. You left without the box of parts. At least I
remember. Yeah, and you called me and I was back in 8 seconds. Remember that?
Yeah, apparently you hadn't left yet.
No, I was still programming my phone.
Anyway.
Man, sorry, Owen.
We'll get to that.
Don't worry about it. We'll get to that. We got it done anyway.
Oh, throw me under the bus anyway, even though it wasn't a problem.
Of course. Hey, have you been on this show before?
It was a problem. Don't worry. It was a problem. No, we... yeah, so I've got pretty much everything except the muzzle device kind of on its way. So, yeah, when that all gets here, it'll be put together. It's going to be a pretty cool little rig. I did want to order the charging handle because this gun is supposed to be sort of for my wife. Yeah. And she needs something decent to grab hold of because she's not, you know, she's just not as strong in the upper body as a man would be, so she has a harder time pulling the charging handle back easily. So something to get grip.
Still willing to bet she's stronger than some.
Oh yeah, yeah. She's yeah. Anyway. So we did that, and last week I was loading 9mm like crazy. I could almost see the bottom of my ammo can that had my brass in it, and I was like, I am going to get to the bottom of this can tonight, and I almost did. And then I broke the decapping pin. So. In the press, so that
did you find a piece of Burden primed?
I didn't, but I did. I didn't realize what happened at first, and I noticed that one of the brass was too full, and I was like, "That's weird," like too much. Because I usually watch it as it comes around before I put my, I'm to make sure there's powder in it and make sure it's not too much or too little, and just sort of do it manually. So I pulled it out and I dumped it back in the.
Powder hopper,
and then proceeded to do the next one, and something wasn't right, didn't feel right. And then I pulled it out and realized it didn't deprime it. So I did another one and noticed it didn't deprime it, and I was like, okay, something screwed up. And then I looked up in the die and saw that it was broken. So I got a feeling I dumped it out into my powder measure.
Oh, that'll be fun.
Yeah.
So now I've got to take that out and dump it all out and try and find that little piece of steel in there.
So what was it that broke the pin?
I have no idea.
Your excessive muscles and power.
Sure.
I broke one in a... go ahead.
I was going to say, these dies have done thousands and thousands of rounds. So, I mean...
Yeah, it was about time it broke. Trevor breaks his press every other week, so...
Yeah, it seems that way lately.
Yeah. So, anyway, that kind of put an end to that. So, I had to jump on eBay and order a few more of those.
It's too bad. You should... Jazz brought me down 10.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
I got a 650, you got a 650, and I got a spare parts kit. So next time something like that happens, just give me a jingle. I might have what you need.
Yeah, I will. So anyway, yeah, I definitely wanted to replace it because, I mean, it was just David's press, actually. Random Dave.
Yep.
Random Brunswick Dave's press. So I, you know, it's his dies even. Anyway, that's done. Let me see. Boxing Day, I went to a local sort of community skeet shoot for an hour or two.
That's right. Owen lives in a community that has a community skeet shoot. Yep. Can you say out back of nowhere?
Oh, and it is. And we go to the camp and we basically shoot into the... And the way it works is there's usually two throwers. This year there was two. Sometimes there's one. But this year there was an automatic one with the foot pedal, mm-hmm. and another guy running like a string pulled thrower, and they just throw them as fast as they can, and if there better be people on the line shooting them, and they go through they probably go through at least a dozen boxes of skeet that day.
That would be so much fun.
Oh yeah, it's just one out, and there might be seven or eight shooters at the line all shooting at the same skeet.
Nice.
So yeah, it gets pretty wild and crazy. I try to go earlier in the day before the drinking starts.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, we're dealing with some, you know, not to insult these guys, but some country guys that really need to take the firearms course again because there's some pretty atrocious
or gun for hand. The first time.
Yeah. That's true. You know, so anyway, it's interesting. But yeah, Dave usually goes and I know a couple of the other guys. So it's kind of fun to get out and see everybody for a couple hours. And I usually take my, you know, the KSG and scare everybody half to death. And then take my goose gun and actually shoot something.
Is that an assault rifle?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I had a few heads turning.
Yeah, that's illegal.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, that's why I brought it out in public. You're right, call the police.
So, anyway, that was fun. And the only other thing, I guess, jumping back to this past week, two things, actually. I took the scope off my 1022 and put a red dot on it.
Oh, cool.
Yep. That worked quite well, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that worked pretty well. And then I put Trigicon night sights on my Glock without a Glock tool.
Thanks to Trevor.
Sorry.
And apparently,
it worked, though.
You can change the front sight on a Glock with a pair of needle nose pliers.
Oh, man, my skin's crawling.
Trevor's like that.
Oh, my God.
It's got to be the right tool for the job or don't even do it.
You got it.
Yep. Meanwhile, hey, we just get her done.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. Didn't break anything. Everything went just well. It's yeah.
Yeah. I cannot get over.
It's gone yet.
Okay.
Did you Loctite it?
Once he Yes.
Cool.
Yeah, they have the orange dot around the front insert on the front sight and no dots on the back, just the inserts.
Yep.
So you can in the you know, daylight, you can see the rear inserts just a little bit, but that front orange dot is so bright it just boom, it just jumps right out at you.
Yeah, that's
even when you're focusing on the target. Oh, even that focusing on the target, the front sight is blaring at you. And then, of course, at night, it's, you know, you walk into a dark room, it's just like three glowing bulbs on there. So nice. I'm very impressed.
Yeah, it was nice.
Very nice.
I should get a set of those.
What did they run? About $130?
Yeah, mine, I think, were right around that. A little more with shipping.
Worth it, though.
Yeah.
So cool.
Matthew?
What's that?
Yeah, I know you were saying you should get those, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, I should get a fresh set, too. Mine or Matthew, you saw mine. They're looking kind of tired, and they don't have that orange ring.
The orange ring is really, really nice.
Yeah. It's like an improvement, like a newer generation of what I have.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, you can get, there's different ones. You can get all different kinds. Some have a yellow ring. Some have different inserts.
I like the orange. The orange is easy to see.
Yeah, I found the orange was a little more blaring than the yellow.
Yeah.
How's the space on either side of the front sight when you have it notched in the rear?
Good.
Yeah, yep. Mine's very, very small. Like hardly anything at all.
Yeah. No, it's a big rear notch. It's really, really nice.
Okay. Yeah, I find mine.
And I like the fact it's curved. So basically, when the three sights are lined up across the top, the dot is resting in the bottom of the rear sight.
Nice.
Just again, the back is curved, so it curves right with the front dot. Where my Glock, I found that in order to get the sights lined up across the top, I was cutting off some of the front dot in the rear notch.
Yeah. No, I know what you're talking about. It's just the rear notch wasn't deep enough.
Yeah.
You either lined up the top or you didn't see all the dots. So you ended up putting the dot where you're focusing on the front sights. So you look at the dot, well, then your sights aren't lined up properly because
the
front post is higher than the back ones.
Yep.
And that was just a function of the notch being too shallow. And this one, the notch is very deep. It's very nice.
Yep. So thank you for the recommendation, Trevor. Probably one of the best gun upgrades I've ever made. So
speaking of Trevor, why don't you tell us what you did? And I don't want to tell you to hurry up, but Owen took 16 minutes, so. And Trevor's muted his mic because we can't hear him.
My bad. So you and I went shooting, and you and I and Jason to play with his new Axis.
That's right, because last week we talked about how you and I went shooting, but the very next day we went shooting at the range again with Jason this time. So
yeah, so yeah. I'll move on. Reloaded some 40, but 1,040 through the press, and started to clean some brass with my stainless steel tumbling media. It's, of course, it's always amazing, but I'm working on some 308 brass that I'm going to actually try and prep and sell. So resize it all, and then I'm going to completely sell it prepped. The only thing left to do is prime it and fill it. And I also broke a decapping pin. I think I texted you about this, Matthew. I had some 7.62x51 brass, and that's what it said. And I wasn't going to throw it in with the 308. I was like, well, whatever. This mix head stamp guy, I'm selling it to guys that are going to put it through their M14s probably anyway. It's not like I'm selling Lapua brass here. So what the heck, right? Yeah, if it says 7.62x51, it's probably Verdun primed. And I have the broken decapping pin to prove it. So
that's too bad.
Yeah. And then I busted another spring on my Dillon. I know I put a lot of rounds through my Dillon, but man, this is the fourth or fifth part that I've replaced on the Dillon in 3 years. I don't know if that's a good track record or not, but anyway, this one is the spring that pushes the brass into the shell plate, and it was failing. And it was really, what was happening was it just was almost there, and then you'd pull the handle down, which would lift the shell plate, and the brass was just misaligned enough to crush half of it into your reloading die. So a bit of a pain in the butt there. But
I'd say
you must really be coming onto it.
Well,
I mean, I have that happen every once in a while, and it just hits the bottom of the die, and I just kind of reach in and pull it so it lines up. And
I got to the point with my 9mm that I would just jiggle the handle and it would line itself up. And admittedly, with my 9mm major loads, I was going slow because you're talking eight grains of gunpowder in the case. And the Dillon shell plate has a bit of a snap when it stops when it gets to the next location on the tool head.
Yep.
And or on the ram, rather. And so that snapping of it stopping into place causes powder to overflow. And so I started to slow down with the 9mm. But with the 40, my 40 brass is bulge bust bulge busted, which is a form of resizing it to take the bottom bulge out of the case before I put it through the regular resizing die. So I use the bulge buster and I use an undersized die, but because the brass is essentially already resized, the 40 reloading that I do in my press is so smooth that I can go really fast, and admittedly I go too fast. And so I often, you know, I can crank out by myself 100 rounds in just under 6 minutes. So,
wow.
Yeah, I'm cranking on it. So that's all I did. A little bit of shooting with Matthew and a little bit of reloading. It's been quiet. It's been too cold.
It's been very cold.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, I guess that brings us to me.
Yeah.
I did a little bit more messing around with my 795. I put that the ATI stock on it, and then it turns out that I have this little kind of nylon pouch, Velcro wallet pouch. Almost. I normally, what's that?
Almost like a little wallet.
Yeah, it's like a little. I usually keep shotgun shells in it, and it has two snaps on the back, so I can put the, you know, put it on my belt without taking my belt off. It just kind of goes through and snaps onto my belt, and I can carry 5 or 6, you know, 12 gauge or 20 gauge shells with me while I'm out hunting. Well, it turns out it fits perfectly through some slots on the back of the stock, and I can put 4 magazines for the 795 right in there, so I can now carry 40 rounds. And then I rigged up a 5th pouch on the other side, so I can now carry 50 rounds on my 795 right on the gun. It's right on the stock, and it doesn't interfere with anything. So
how cool is that?
It's quite slick. I'm really impressed with how well it. I mean, it was like it was made for it. It wasn't.
Or rock solid too. It doesn't jiggle or sag, or, you know, yep. If you shake the gun, it doesn't wobble around. It's rock solid.
Yeah, maybe it's held on by snaps, but the second part is held on by black zip ties, so that's a little ghetto, but whatever. It works for now until I wanted it non-permanent for now because, you know, I might not like it, so, but I might put some thread through it and keep it there permanently, but
sounds
I might
like post a YouTube some pictures. Video.
Yeah, maybe. Or maybe even just some pictures with an explanation on Facebook. But so yeah, I did that. So it's kind of more of a survival type gun now, because now it's got ammo right with it all the time, which is kind of cool, except when it's in storage, of course, because, unless it's in my safe, in which case, yeah, it's perfectly fine. But, other than that, co-built the AR with Owen, which was a lot of fun, range with Trevor and Jason, of course. We shot a lot of 22s that day, I remember. I shot Trevor's Glock some more as well. Had some fun with that. And then, I bought a Glock too, so, but other than that, nothing.
Okay.
just bought a Glock.
Just bought know. A Glock.
Yeah, tell whatever. I mean,
what gen? How many mags? Where it
they're
come
so
from?
Common. It's just like going to the grocery store and picking up a dozen eggs, right? Oh, I bought a
well,
Glock.
That's where you got it,
whatever.
Right?
That's where I got it. Yeah,
got
the
it
grocery
at Walmart,
store.
In the Tupperware section.
It was in a Cracker Jack box. It was the prize. It's a Gen 3 used. It comes with 3 17-round magazines pinned to 10, which was the selling point for me.
Yep.
Because I really like it. They load so much easier because you're not completely compressing the spring. So you can load them with your thumb. I mean, you can load the 10 rounders with your thumb too, but when you're loading them constantly all day at an IPSC match, it gets tired fast unless you have one of those magazine loaders, the Uplulas. But, so yeah, that was a real cool selling point. And the other cool selling point was it comes with a Blade Tech holster, and I have a Blade Tech holster from my SR9, which means that all I've got to do is undo 3 screws, and I can put the Glock on my IPSC belt just by swapping 3 screws and putting the new holster on.
Sweet.
So that's going to be neat. So basically, I just need 2 more magazines for the Glock 17, and I'll be set for IPSC in the spring. Because I got a set of Trijicon night sights for my Glock, same as Owen's.
Oh. <For you. laughs>
So, yeah, actually, Owen surprised me with that. He ordered it for me because he knew I wanted a set, so he ordered it, and I'll be taking care of paying for that later. But, yeah, he's like, I knew you wanted
yours,
it.
Yours were a good deal, too.
Yeah. I don't even know how much I paid for them yet, but I'm impressed.
Awesome.
But so I'm looking forward to getting that, and I do believe, Trevor, just to keep your skin from crawling, I will install it with your night your tool.
Thank your, you. Or even better, let me install it for you.
I could do that too, but I'm pretty sure I'm competent enough to change the
sights. Not the point.
Oh, right. You just wanted to touch the gun.
You got it.
But now you have a bunch of Gen 3. Now, here's the thing. I thought, a while ago I asked Owen what kind of Glock he had, Gen 3 or Gen 4, and he said Gen 4. And I was like, okay, well, I'm pretty sure Trevor has a Gen 3. So I was like, I can get a Gen 3 or a Gen 4. It doesn't really matter. The magazines all interchange anyway. But then I'm talking to Trevor, and I had forgotten that I'd asked Owen. I'm like, so what do you have anyway? And you're like, Gen 4? And oh, well, I think Owen has a Gen 3 anyway, so it's no big... And then, well, it turns out both you guys have Gen 4s. I've got the only Gen 3 of the bunch, so...
Yeah.
But whatever. The parts are all close enough. I think it's just the slides and the double recoil spring is the only real major change.
And if you ask me... They were trying to solve a problem that didn't exist. I mean, the double recoil spring cuts down the recoil a little bit, but what are we talking about here? We're talking about 9 mil. Exactly. Yeah. That single recoil spring is so much more reliable. Why? It's one rod and one spring.
That's right. It's, less moving parts.
Yeah, they did.
But you have leftover trigger parts and all kinds of other parts from other Glocks that you've had. So I definitely see a road trip in my future as soon as it gets here.
Excellent.
And I think we're going to mess around with different springs, different connectors, different this and that, get a really nice, perfect, just over 5 pound trigger pull so that it gets me through my level 3 IPSC matches. And then
give me a heads up and I'll make sure I've got the digital trigger scale here, or we could always do the water trick that you do.
Sure. Yeah, whichever.
And it'll be fun because we do have lots of options because not all parts
are equal.
Yeah, I can put a connector in my gun and then put it in Owen's gun and it will actually feel different.
Yeah. So yeah, we'll mess around with that and get in a real nice, good, consistent trigger pull with all factory parts, of course, and keep it completely IPSC legal.
Yep.
And
home defense legal.
Yeah, and home defense legal. And then, of course, with a new...
Here, but...
Well, I could still use it if I had to.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is they won't jump on you for any more than they would.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to get jumped on with the full weight of the law regardless.
Exactly.
So, yeah. I mean, it is nice to have that one less thing that they can accuse me of. That's You're right. Just trying to have a hair trigger so you can kill people.
Exactly. So with that being said, since I know I'm going to get jumped on to the full extent of the law, I now have my open gun in my Fort Knox safe.
Well, there you go.
Light him up with the red dye.
You just have to miss because he'll be so deaf and scared.
Yeah, can you imagine that comp?
You're
going to
be deaf after you light that thing off in your house. Yeesh.
Awful.
Anyhow. So, it should be fun. As soon as it gets here, I'll let you guys know. And, of course, there'll be pictures and whatnot whenever. Because, nobody's seen a Glock 17 before.
Well, nobody's seen yours.
That's right. There are many like it, but this one is mine.
That's right. What's the round count like?
I don't know. I don't know how many rounds been through it. I don't think very many. I think it's fairly lightly used.
Doesn't really matter.
It doesn't, no. I mean, the only thing I'm going to have to change if it is high round count is a recoil spring, so and that's
and
no big
striker.
Deal. Oh, yeah.
Striker spring. If you start to get weak primer strikes, you can actually, you take your calipers and you measure a used Glock striker as opposed to a brand new Glock striker.
They're different lengths.
Yeah, so surprisingly quite a bit. And there's a primer on the market right now. Oh, here, Mark's got some here. Mark's over here right now hanging out. The Palki primers.
Sure.
I think they're from some Soviet bloc country. It doesn't exist anymore. Anyway, they're very hard.
And
Jason said he had to replace a striker after one season.
Wow.
Sellier and Belliot.
Sellier and Belliot.
Yeah.
Yep. Oh, yep. I've heard those
from
are
the
hard.
Czech Republic. Okay. So I guess it's still
shot used. Lots of them.
Yep. Yeah.
Oh, you did?
They're dirt cheap down here. The local gun store sells them for cheaper than I've ever seen it anywhere, even online.
How much for a thousand?
He was selling for like $300.
No, for 1,000.
Oh, yeah, $300.
No, primers, Owen.
No, he's buying the loaded ammo.
Oh, loaded ammo?
Yeah loaded ammo, Sellier and Belliot. Yeah.
Really?
Yep. That's that ammo with the red, it's painted red, the primers are painted red, that's that stuff.
Oh, those things are a bugger to reload.
You hate them.
Primer pockets aren't crimped, but man, you got to take your time and have things lined up. It's a tight primer pocket.
Never had any problems. And that's
most of our brasses. I've crushed several primers in that brass, almost as many as IVI. If you don't get your IVI
Yeah.
Primer pocket cleaned out. Yeah. So, you could do better though. I suppose this is factory ammo, but Mo was selling 1,000 rounds of 9mm for $280.
Oh, that's a good deal.
Yeah. That's a good price too. All right, well, let's wrap that up. Let's move into upcoming events and special news and whatnot. T-shirt orders, of course, are ongoing. Send an EMT or PayPal to slamfireradio@gmail.com. We prefer EMT, but if PayPal is your only option, we will get that taken care of for you as well. Please include your full name and address and what you ordered, so what size, and we'll get those out. Within the next eon, I'm sure.
Yeah, sadly, Ron Burgundy won't get his shirt in time for SHOT Show.
Yeah, sorry. But we'll, yeah, it is what it is. Charity shoot, June 28th. Steve Lee is coming to the Rusty Goose Gun Club to shoot some traps, small bore silhouette, rifle shooting, and some IPSC-style mini-match shooting. So come on out to that. It's going to be a blast. I believe it's $20 at the door. Is that right, gentlemen?
Yeah, sounds good, yep.
Something like that.
Well, and we'll have to get it together and announce our charity for next week. We just got
we decided we just need to nail down a few final details, and we will announce that next week as long as none of us go squirrel. Practical Armed Response Academy shooting course. Did so Tommy from the Gun Dudes, what's that?
Did you guys see that rock?
I did see that rock. Yeah. Tommy, hello. What's happening?
That was easy.
Who's here? And you are. So yeah, Tommy from the Gun Dudes. He's coming up. He's a Mag 40 instructor, and he's coming. Well, we're aiming for. Haha, get that pun there. Aiming for August 2nd and 3rd. It's going to be a one-day defensive handgun instructional course, and the second day is going to be a mini match. So that's going to be a lot of fun. Come on out. It's actually full, so get your name on the waiting list if you're looking to attend that, and if anybody drops off, we'll let you know. Other than that, Trevor's planning a multi-gun for August 16th and 17th. That's going to be a lot of fun. That's also at the Rusty Goose Gun Club, and that's pretty much it. So, yeah, let's move into our main topic.
All right, so now we're going to move into the main topic, the good guns versus ugly guns, or sleek guns versus blocky guns, or reliable guns versus picky guns, or 1911
guns that work versus the ones that don't.
Guns that work versus the ones that don't, yeah. High-end guns versus polymer, plastic, Lego guns, you know.
So basically, like, the epitome of the pistol as designed with its historical value, you know, something that's just perfect in every way, and then, of course, the 1911.
That's right, folks. It's time for us to discuss 1911 type guns versus, well, Glocks, frankly.
I like how you said type. It's ever since you got that blasted 2011, it's 1911 type guns. It's, oh, that one looks like a 1911, but it really isn't, because,
that's right.
You know.
We're not here to debate that again.
He said type because he wants to make sure that everybody understands that the 2011 is actually a 1911.
Right.
If he just said 1911s, right, or just 2011s, but it's not. All those types. So they're all. He's including that 2011 in with the 1911.
Perfect.
Off the rails already. So I'd like to welcome Jeff Reese to the show. Jeff Reese, as people who've been listening to the show for a long time, he's one of the guys I went to hang out with and shoot gophers in the face with and go to the Calgary Gun Show with last year. And more recently, he's a recent turncoat. So Jeff Reese, welcome to Slam Fire Radio.
Yeah, this is great so far.
Yeah.
So Jeff was a hardcore Glock guy, like the rest of us here. And then for some god-awful reason, I don't know why, he went out and bought a Ruger 1911, Ruger SR 1911, an actual 1911. Wait, Jeff, does that have an internal or external extractor?
Internal, of course.
All right, it's, of course, right? Like a real 1911 should.
With no Series 80.
Yeah. Now, Jeff, how does a Glock guy turn into a 1911 guy?
Well, to say I was anti-1911 would be like saying Stalin was overbearing.
Okay, I can relate.
I work in a gun store, and it just kept staring at me all day long. I just
not just any gun store. Tell them which one you work at.
The Calgary Shooting Center, of course. The only gun store.
Well, it's not the only one, but it certainly has one of the. Well, it has the nicest indoor range I've been to so far in Canada.
Yeah, it's pretty busy.
Yeah, for sure. So, all right. So this thing kept staring at you, mocking you, basically.
Yeah, and it was $699. So.
What?
Yeah.
You could have bought a Glock for that price.
I have a Glock.
Exactly.
But I sold my Sig Sauer to buy a 1911.
Well, you know what? That's a lateral move, if you ask me.
I was going to say, Matthew, isn't that going to the left?
That, yeah.
Right?
Well.
Not forward or backwards.
No.
Well, it is going from double action, single action to just straight up single action.
And that, you know what? You went up a half a step there. I have to concur. I don't see the point in a double action, single action. It's a solution to a problem that never existed.
Kind of like 18-pound mainsprings in New York police pistols?
Yep, kind of like that.
Well, that was a solution to...
a problem that never existed.
Well, let's not train them to shoot. Let's just make sure that they can't pull the trigger accidentally.
Right.
That's cheaper than actually putting money and time into training them. But anyway,
Maybe they should have trained them to actually hit something when they pull the trigger as well. Not just the people behind the bad guy.
Yeah. So, guys, why don't we do this? Why don't we talk about what we like about each platform?
Oh, well, let's start with 1911s. Perfect. Now let's move on to Glocks.
Awesome.
Well, let's just divert to the expert, Mr. Furlot, on 1911s.
Oh, please. I don't know anything about 1911s because I don't own one.
All right, let's go seriously here for a minute. That's going to last for very long. But seriously, I do enjoy the aesthetics of the 1911. It's that classic John Wayne in a Vietnam movie kind of pistol that you see all the commanders on the World War II front lines carrying around and using, and it looks cool. And personally, I'm partial to the commander length slide and the rounded hammer, not the original hammer. That looks like a fantastic firearm. I really do enjoy the look of it.
Yeah, I'll agree with you there, Matthew. Aesthetically, they are pleasing. And with you, I prefer a commander length than a standard length, especially if you. But, well, actually, no. If you're going to pimp them out and put the ivory grip panels on and get them all polished and stuff like that, I like the full-length one.
Right, because, well, you're showing off your gun, and, of course, bigger is better, right?
I guess.
I really like a matte black finish with walnut grips or a very rich blued finish with walnut grips. The other really nice finish I like is it's kind of a matte black with like a Kevlar grip. And I guess technically on 1911s, the grips are actually called stocks. A little bit of tidbit of trivia there for anybody who didn't know that. But yeah, I don't know. I like them, you know, I like a pistol that's kind of looks very utilitarian, you know, kind of non-glare, rounded off edges, you know, kind of like a Glock.
Yeah. What about you, Owen? Is there anything you like about the 1911 or 1911S clones, the platform?
No.
Nothing.
Well, they do shoot 45, and 45 is a cool caliber. I mean, go big or go home.
A Glock that shoots 45.
That's true. That's true.
With you better can. Capacity. We'll get there.
Yeah.
Owen, have you shot them much? You shot many 1911s?
No, I don't have a lot of experience with them. I mean, I have my GSG 1911, which is a, you know, a 22. But it's very, you know, style-wise and feel-wise, it's a 1911.
Yep.
My brother-in-law has a CZ, which, you know, I guess is sort of that way. It has the beaver tail, you know, but it's not really a 1911.
I think the CZ may have been inspired by the 1911, but there's a huge difference between
them. Yeah, it's not really a 1911. Yeah. I don't really have
they're
a lot
as
of
far
experience
apart,
with
I believe a CZ and a 1911 are as far apart as a Glock and a 1911.
Yes. No, they're not that far apart, but they are quite far apart.
Internals?
Yeah, as far as internals, but there's some styling, like as far as styling and feel.
Yeah.
You know.
They're both metal.
I have shot a couple. They burnt me.
Yeah.
My hand burnt. Yeah, quite bad. But
they burnt you? How'd they burn you?
Did you just blight it on? Reaction, because I had Glock residue on my hand. And
right. And the Glock residue was just so epically awesome that it had to burst into flames because you touched a 1911.
Right. Well, I mean, the 1911s didn't leave the range. I mean, the Glock killed it before it left, so.
Right.
No, a couple friends of mine have them. I've shot them, you know, when I was at the range. I've shot them maybe once or twice, but I don't pick it up and go, oh, wow, I could get used to this. I pick it up and go, well, that's annoying.
Like the grip safety.
Friggin' safety on it.
grip safety. Silly.
Yeah. What do you like about the Matthew other than how they look?
I like the trigger.
Like, me too.
Single stage, nice, crisp trigger, single action. There's none of this messing about with safe actions and double actions and all this other crud. It's just a single, crisp, it makes the 1911 a very accurate platform because you have a very good trigger on it.
Yeah, not single stage. Well, I mean, maybe high tune. Or,
well, some of them can be, but...
Yeah, like even both of mine 2011s, I was going to say it, they have super short resets. And it is a sharp, crisp break, but there's also, you know, there's not a half inch travel like on a Glock, but there's a little bit of take up. But you can't find a smoother trigger for how it actually breaks.
Well, let's ask Jeff, seeing as we invited him on the show to talk about this with us, we might as well include him, I guess.
Let's let him speak. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Well, what do you want to know? What I like about them?
It's your turn, Jeff. What do you like about them? And, you know, you were a Glock guy, you bought one. Why?
Well, the first 1911 I shot was a Wilson Combat.
Ooh.
So that's kind of up there.
Yeah, it's like saying the first car I drove was a Ferrari.
Yeah, and I got to say, the trigger is the best. I mean, and the small grip. And the recoil. You can actually shoot through the recoil pretty nice. I like the 45.
Yeah. Now, that being said, I shot some full power 45 loads out of Dave Kratke's 1911 last time I was in Ontario, and well, it's actually got recoil.
Yeah, and it's actually, Matthew, even worse. Like, those were UMC target loads. If you pick up some personal defense ammo to put,
that'll be even worse.
You got it.
Yeah. No, they're snappy for sure. I mean, when they go off, you know you've lit off a cannon there. Hand cannon. I guess that's one of the reasons why they call them a hand cannon.
Yeah.
Are all 45s dirty in terms of gunpowder residue and mess?
I think all guns are dirty in terms of that.
Well, it depends, I think, on what you're putting through it. I don't think it's the 45 that's any dirtier than any other caliber. Like,
is it just a slow-burning powder?
Yeah, well, different brands have a reputation of being dirtier. Like, Winchester White Box is supposed to be dirty.
Well, it's true. 45s have lower pressures, but I don't know if that in any way equates to how well the powder burns, its efficiency, and if that leaves more or less residue. I have no idea. All I know is they do shoot lower pressures than other common handgun rounds.
Mm-hmm.
Have you looked at the Ruger 1911 yet?
Never.
I've looked at it
personally.
Shot one.
Haven't shot one?
I have shot one.
How did you like it, Owen?
I vaguely remember it. I just put a couple rounds through it. It was nice. I mean, it was a 1911. I just can't get over the feel of them. You know, the difference in angle of the grip, the safeties, the all that stuff. To me, just when you're used to not having any of those gadgets. I don't like it. No, it's not very articulate. I can't really articulate why, other than
I think you're
all that extra stuff
perfectly.
To me just goes. I just don't like it. I just go, I don't want all this extra crap on my gun. I don't want to have to grip. I have a really hard time engaging a grip safety on a 1911. For whatever reason, the way I hold my gun.
Oh, interesting.
I can never. It seems every time I pull it up, click, or it won't even click. It doesn't even. I can't pull the trigger. I have to adjust my grip to engage that grip safety.
I went through that in the beginning when I got my GSG, because the Glock grip and the 1911 grip are so inherently different that it took a while to get used to. Now, that being said, in both my competition pistols, the grip safeties are disengaged, And right. if I had a carry gun, it would be disengaged as well, because let's say you don't have the perfect textbook grip, so bloody what? Sometimes you still need the gun to go bang off the table or whatever, right?
Yep.
So, no, I don't know why they are still producing 1911s and 1911. We'll call it all 1911s for simplicity's sake. I don't know why they're still producing them with that grip, especially with that grip safety, especially in competition models. Now, if you look at the Infiniti, Infiniti is, I don't know if they make any guns other than competition guns, but they're a 1911 clone. They have the beaver tail grip on them, just like the Tanfoglios do. Nice big beaver grip, deep throat, so you can get your hand really high up on the pistol's grip, but no but no safety. It's a 1911 clone, but they've done away with that safety. And that's the main complaint I have with both of mine, is that there's so many little rough edges and creases and nooks and crannies in the back of that gun, where if you pick up a Glock, there's nothing in the back. The throat of the grip, your the web of your hand sits up in there, and there's nothing to irritate it. I got a callus on my thumb knuckle just from dry firing my my True Bore, because the back end of the grip is just full of little nooks and crannies and sharp edges. Did you find that, Jeff?
Well, originally 1911 didn't have.
What's that?
I say originally the 1911 didn't have a grip safety, but the government made them added.
Yep.
So I think the original version, that was 1911.
Yeah, that's true. But that, yeah, but every one that we get today on the market has it, and I think it has it for nostalgic purposes, really.
I've never had it get in the way. I've never had it not work and not be deactivated just from gripping it.
Mm-hmm.
But biggest thing was, yeah, between the web and my rear hand, where I try to jam it up so high in the beaver tail, it actually starts to get a little sore after a while. But and there's no rear tracking. It's just there's no front strap tracking, just on the rear. So it's not like a piece of sandpaper.
No, and I have checkering on both of my mainspring housings, but I get all banged up from around the beaver tail safety and the regular thumb safeties, and just where the frame meets the grip. It may be different on a one-piece grip, but on these two-piece frames where the grip comes off of the actual frame of the gun, it's quite sharp.
Now, I did shoot an STI in 357 SIG.
Oh, me too.
Ross. Yeah. That thing cuts me to pieces. That safety and that magazine release is just uncomfortable.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm talking about. It's an Eagle, just like mine, and the grip is the same.
Yeah, and of course, 357 SIG is such a soft shooting caliber.
Especially,
yeah, I mean, there's not very much pressure there at all, right?
No.
Like a 22, basically.
Basically, pretty like much, a neck down 22. It's kind of
like a neck. Yeah,
it's like it's like a loaded down 38 special.
Pretty much, yeah.
Beauty. Well, that's half of our time now talking about 1911s. Let's change gears and go to Glocks.
Congratulations, Matthew.
Why is that?
Did you want to talk about that now?
Oh, yeah, I bought a Glock. Well, the listeners will have known that because this is halfway through the show, Trevor.
I knew that.
Yeah, you knew that. Sometimes knew that we were recording the show out of order.
Sometimes the magic of radio is lost on me. I get confused easily. I saw a rock.
It's okay.
Let me tell you.
So, yeah, I'm sure the listeners are still proud of me that I bought a Glock. So, yes.
Now, okay, go ahead. Why?
Why did I buy a Glock? Because you and Owen have one.
Perfect.
Also because Dave has one.
Yes.
And because Jeff has one.
There you go.
Yeah. No, basically because it is an extremely common pistol. They just work is another good answer. The plethora of spare parts is a reason that I bought it. The fact that I can share magazines with almost anybody else who has a pistol, because they're that ubiquitous. They're just all over the place, you know? I like the fact that they're so common. It just makes sense. It's like buying a shotgun. You either get a Remington or a Mossberg because they're so common. You can get parts for them anywhere. You know, I don't know.
And you do shoot it well. You know, it's not like you're buying something for that reason, but you don't really shoot it that well. I mean, you do shoot a Glock well.
Well, that's to be determined, I guess.
Well, we've seen you shoot mine well. I'm sure you've shot Owen's well.
I've been playing with both yours and Owen's, and I still need to work on my trigger pull with it. do notice that I have to really concentrate to keep the front sight centered in the notch whenever the trigger breaks. So I still need to work on pulling straight back or adjusting my grip or something to make sure that stays true. But I think with a bit of practice, you know, it is a different grip angle, and the trigger is different from my SR9. So, I mean, that does make sense.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll get through that, I'm sure.
The other thing I like about Glocks, if I can be so bold as to take a turn, I love how easy they are to work on. You're talking
that
about
is a the simplicity of it. You know, a couple of pins, all you need is something to push pins out with, and you can basically tear down the whole thing.
We skipped over that on the 1911 platform. It also has incredibly low parts count. Both of these guns have a very low parts count. I haven't done the count yet exactly, but I mean, you saw the video where I disassembled, did a detail strip on a Glock, and reassembled it blindfolded. So the manual, you wouldn't call it the manual of arms, but you know, the ease of assembly and disassembly is ridiculous.
Yep.
Actually, I was surprised how easy the 1911 was actually to take apart my first time after watching YouTube.
I still can't figure it out.
I think
it's not that.
I've tried to take that GSG apart so many times. I can't figure it out for the life of me.
There's that extra screw in the GSG.
There's a couple extra things in there. There's a mag safety. I took that out. And it's a series. What's your 1911, Jeff? A 70 or an 80?
70.
70, then this one's an 80. This is the one that has the different firing pin block safety in it.
Nice thing with the Ruger, that little plunger tube that can come loose.
Yeah.
It can't. It's actually cast into the frame.
Oh, very good. So an improvement.
Yeah, I think it was just ease of manufacturing. Make it cheaper.
Right. So
back to Glocks. Go
ahead. Well, I was going to ask you, Owen, why did you decide to get a Glock when you did? You had the Glock before you knew any of us.
I had a SIG clone, P226 clone, before that, and my first pistol. And in the local gun store, I found out they had Glocks in stock. And so I went in and said, hey, I'd like to handle one of those. And it was kind of this eureka, you know, light bulb, hallelujah chorus, angels floating in the sky moment.
Nice.
And because it just fit. It just fit my hand. It just, the very first time I picked it up and took a sight picture, the sights were lined up. And I was just like, this is it. And the Glock was kind of iconic anyway. And I knew they worked. I liked the fact that it didn't have any sort of manual safeties, other than what's built into the gun and my hand. I guess a hand, your trigger finger, that would be a manual safety, wouldn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
by definition.
Yeah.
And it goes bang every time. As long as I don't screw up my reloading, it goes bang every time.
Yeah.
See, I didn't realize about how reliable they were. I wanted a Glock ever since the first time I saw one in a movie or in a magazine.
Die Hard, right? Glock 7, that thing costs more than you make in a month.
Yeah, that's right. I liked how they look. I mean, black is one of my favorite colors, and I was like, wow, it's all black, and it looked so advanced because it had the polymer grip on it, or the polymer frame, and that was like kind of so different from all the other platforms out there. I wanted one since I was a kid, and when I joined the gun club,
Glocks when you were a kid?
They did. Back in 1911, they had Glocks then too.
Yes. Guns when he was a kid?
Yeah. Great. Jeff, you're older than I am. Speak up, man.
No, you're doing pretty good.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah.
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 I'll throw you another life preserver.
Appreciate it.
With a hole in it.
Well, okay, why did you get yours, Jeff? Because you had the Sig Sauer in 40 cal, which I didn't quite understand, but it was a really nice shooting gun. But then you had your Glock, and you shoot IDPA with your Glock. Why did you choose a Glock when you did?
because I started shooting the IDPA with my SIG and started getting my ass handed to me every time I went up a guy with a Glock. No, the double action was just a shot into the berm pretty much every time.
Let's mention to our listeners who may be new to firearms differences between these triggers that we keep talking about. The Glock has a safe action, the 1911 has a single action, and we're also talking about this double action, single action pistol. So, Trevor, why don't you take one, and Owen take one, I'll take one. Let's explain what these different triggers are.
All right, I'll take the double action. It's what the name implies, two actions. That's where when you squeeze the trigger, it both cocks the hammer and drops the hammer, which hits the firing pin, which hits the striker and causes the gun to fire. And double action revolver or double action pistols are generally holstered with the hammer down. And when you pull the gun out, that first trigger pull is a double action trigger pull, and it's very long and very heavy and less accurate. It's about the best I can do with it.
Yep, that works. And then traditionally, the double action pistols are also they're double slash single action, which means the first shot is that double action. It's cocking the hammer, but after that, the slide, of course, goes back on the recoil, cocks the hammer. Now every shot afterwards is a super light trigger pull.
Yeah, it's a single action. So you have to, and the trigger just does that one action, dropping the hammer.
Yes, you really have to concentrate. You have to remember your first shot, and this blew a stage for me in Ipswich once when I was shooting a CZ that was a double action slash single action. My first shot, I completely missed the target because I had forgotten that my first shot is a really long, hard trigger pull, and after that, they're all light. So that's a real downside to double action, single action pistols, mm-hmm. if you ask me.
Oh, I concur. I shot one match in with a double action, single action pistol, and it wasn't the first shot because it was really smooth. It was a competition pistol, so it was light enough. It was 5 pounds. It was smooth. But the second shot, you're not ready for it.
Yeah, it's almost as if you think about it and the gun goes off again because you're so used to pulling 5 pounds of trigger to make the gun go bang, all of a sudden you only have to pull two.
Exactly. You apply that 5 pounds that you think you need to because that's what the first one was, and all of a sudden the trigger, the shot's gone.
Yeah.
So
that's double action and sort of single action, I guess. Single action, of course, just means that you pull the trigger and the hammer falls. The hammer's already cocked. So, Owen, what's Glock have? It's a safe action.
Or striker fired.
Yeah.
Yeah. To be honest, I'm not 100% sure exactly how it works. But So maybe Trevor would be better off. You could probably explain. I now understand how it works, but not well enough to explain it.
Well, rather than having a trigger that cocks a hammer that falls on a firing pin, the trigger allows a striker, which is similar to a firing pin, to go forward and hit the firing pin. But what's interesting about striker-fired pistols is you have a consistent trigger pull for every shot. You never have a heavy pull, then a light pull, or you never have always a super light pull. You have a consistent whatever.
Kind of a medium pull all the time. Yeah, it's usually around 5 pounds.
Yeah, I mean, you can set up a competition striker-fired, like my Glock, competition Glock was a 2.5 pound pull, always. Or a duty Glock would be 5.5 or all the way up to what the silly New York NYPD people
like
carry.
Like 12 or something.
Between 8 and 12, yeah.
Yeah.
Revolver type double action pulls.
Yeah.
So but technically it's a double action, correct?
Well, it sort of is. When you pull the trigger, it doesn't completely cock the striker. It only partially does. And that's why they call it a safe action, because supposedly, if it were to slip off the sear at that sort of half cock, it mm-hmm. wouldn't have enough to light off the firing or the primer. But I mean, that's debatable. I think it's just safe because of the way they built it. They've got three safeties built into basically the whole firing system.
Pretty close. It is. It will draw. I mean, there is no half cock in a Glock. The safe action part is just a safety on the trigger that, unless it squeezed, will not allow the trigger to be squeezed. So you have to pull a trigger safety that will allow the trigger itself to go the rest of the way.
Right, but pulling then the trigger does continue to...
Well, then it disengages the next safety, which is your firing pin safety.
Yep.
But the striker is cocked.
It's not.
Yeah.
No.
All right.
So listeners, write in, tell Owen, tell Trevor he's wrong.
Squeeze the trigger.
Thank you, Jeff.
You squeeze the trigger and it depresses the firing pin safety, and as you continue, the sear disengages from the striker and allows the striker to go forward.
That's true, but
it also compresses the striker spring more.
It does, yes. You can't see it on a Glock, but if you look at my SR9, which is exactly, in the internals are built the same way, you can actually watch the striker come back as you pull the trigger.
I'm going to have to
fall.
Go watch one of those YouTube videos there where it's all cut away and stuff.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's a really good way to have a to look at how they work, is to look at those cutaways.
That's cool. Well, you taught me something, guys. I thought if she was cocked and ready to go, and the only thing that, other than depressing that trigger safety, was the firing pin safety plunger was depressed by the trigger bar.
Yeah, no, the striker comes back a bit more. Well, we've got about a minute left, so why don't we wrap up Glocks versus 1911s and, you know, ultimately decide that Glocks are, of course, better.
I'll say this, my final thoughts. Glocks are a better duty gun, and a 1911 lends itself better to competition when it's tuned for competition.
I would agree with Trevor with the one little side note that if you had your own 1911 set up for duty and you knew it and you kept it clean and you kept it maintained yourself and you trusted your life to it, then a 1911 would also make a good duty gun. But I would say that the Glock is the better duty gun.
I would also concur with all that. It's less work and less maintenance to keep that Glock.
That's right. Alive. Yeah, your Glock is like a Ford F-150 and your 1911's like Maserati.
Yeah, they work, but they require a lot more maintenance.
Yeah. Owen, you have any final thoughts there on this?
Nope.
Jeff?
You guys pretty much covered it.
Well, I mean, I'm still going to shoot my Glock for 90% of my matches, but I will bring out the 1911 just for something different. I mean, it is a whole lot more expensive to shoot 1911, 45 cents a round, but it's just, I get tired of shooting Glocks, so I just decided to mix it up a little bit. Plus, it gives me an excuse to buy some War Concealment Solutions gear.
Of course. That's a great reason there.
Speaking of which, what would you carry?
If I could carry?
Yeah.
I carry a Glock.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Not the one I have now because it has a 3-pound trigger, but...
Yeah, well, you can only fix that.
Anyway, Jeff, thanks for joining us. It was great having you on. And we'll let you get back to your birthday party there.
All right, guys. I'll join you again later on.
Perfect.
Beauty.
Take care, right. Jeff. Thanks.
Okay, bye.
Thanks again to Jeff for hanging out with us for a bit and talking 1911s versus Glocks. I guess it's time for some listener feedback. What do you guys think? Listener feedback?
Okay. I'll grab this one from David because it's short, like my attention span. David says, gentlemen. No, he doesn't say it like that. Only 10X says it like that, but better. Gentlemen. Being the IPSC Jedi Masters that you are, I'm in need of some advice on equipment. He sent this to the wrong podcast. You take the next one. Due to the constant Glock talk, you won't have any of that in tonight's show, I promise you.
No, we don't talk Glocks at all in this show. We really should have talked Glocks, guys.
I like me a good Glock. Due to the constant Glock talk I hear in the show, I am now in possession of a beautiful, Eye of the Beholder, obviously, Gen 4 Glock 17.
Another Gen 4. See, I should have gotten a Gen 4 so I could be like everybody else and be cool.
I would have got it.
No, I want the Gen 3.
My 35 was a Gen 3. My 22 was a Gen 3. I mean, this one fell on my lap. That's the only reason why it happened to be a Gen 4. Yeah, he says, looking at getting into a Black Badge course when I can, but now I need accessories to go with the Glock. Any recommendations on holster, mag holders, and belt? Anything to stay away from? Anything else I need? Thanks, Dave. So he's going to be into production.
Yeah, and if you're in production, you can run any holster you want, but if you're new to this, I highly recommend a combat or duty style holster. Blade Tech makes a wonderful holster that you won't drop your gun out of. Trevor can talk about the speed holsters if he likes now.
I started off my IPSC career with a Sierra Speed Glock holster. And then I changed this year to a Ghost holster. And if I had to do it over again, I would have went Ghost with everything. But that being said, the Ghost is very light, very delicate, very tricky. If you do decide to go with a Race holster, as opposed to Matthew's recommendation, make sure that you get lots and lots of dry fire practice on this thing before you show up to your black badge course, because if you drop your gun out of that holster once, you're out however much money you paid for the course, and you're done, and you'll have to come back and try it again another time. So it's best, if you're new to shooting a gun out of a holster, to start with what Matthew said. If you already have some holster experience and you have time to prepare and time to dry fire, then I would go Ghost or Sierra Speed.
Very good. Mag holders, anything works, really. Just don't get something super cheap, because if you get quality right off the bat, you know, either CR Speed or similar, they will last your entire IPSC career.
Yeah.
Same with belts. Just get a good
adjustable.
One.
Adjustable. That's the only thing. Get adjustable.
Yeah, make sure you get adjustable. Yep. Yeah. Yep. And again, same with your belt. Just get something that's quality. Don't get anything cheap from China. Get something that's sturdy, that's rugged, that, you know, and it will last you your career, your IPSC career. So, you know, buy once, don't buy twice. Any other recommendations? Owen, you got any recommendations for him?
He didn't say anything about mags, but I'm assuming he's going to be picking up a bunch of magazines, because he's going to want 4 or 5 magazines.
I would say 5 is your minimum.
Yeah. Minimum, yeah. And don't minimum. Get the Korean ones.
Oh, no, I was just going to say don't be scared of the Korean ones.
Oh,
I don't have good experience with them. Got bad
really,
luck
with them. I've never had a single. I've got 5 that I use all the time in IPSC, and I've never had a malfunction with them.
Oh, well, interesting.
Lucky. Mark, you're sitting next to me. You have Korean mags for your Glock, and the malfunctions you're having, they're mostly with the Korean mags, aren't they?
Yes.
Yeah. See, Mark as well hasn't had good luck with them. So you got lucky, Owen.
Interesting.
Yeah, Mark's experience with the Korean mags was so bad that he bought genuine Glock mags and just parked the Korean mags for practice only.
Well, it's a good way to practice your malfunctions, I guess.
I'd be interested in buying more.
Pardon me, Owen?
I'd be interested in buying more.
Not these ones.
If they're cheap.
I don't know.
I mean, mags that don't work.
Do you have a Gen 4 or Gen 3?
Gen 4.
Okay.
I blame the fit and finish and the follower.
Yeah, I don't know.
If you stick with the tube and replace the follower and the spring and the floor plate with all genuine Glock parts, then you have that 17-round tube. That's the only advantage to the Korean mag.
Right, they are a little cheaper to buy, but
they're cheaper to buy, and you're buying the 17-round pinned.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, I would get them. And fill them up with Glock parts.
Yeah, I was just going to say, if you are concerned about them, you know, if you can find one somewhere, buy one, see how it works out for you. You know.
Yeah, it's always an option. Just do that well in advance, well before your black badge, because you want to make sure, this is my top recommendation, be comfortable with your gear and know how to shoot your gun.
Yep.
Know everything about it. Already be prepared. Go there with as much knowledge as you possibly can, as much muscle memory for drawing and finger off the trigger at all times. You know, just go there and don't be a noob, I guess, is all I can say.
It'll free your mind up to learn more if you have already given yourself that advantage.
Yes. The Black Badge course is not to teach you how to shoot. It's to teach you how to shoot IPSC.
That's right.
If you need to learn how to shoot, don't take a black badge course. You'll end up worse.
Yeah, know how to clear malfunctions, know how to reload, know how to lock your slide back, know how to operate your safety if you have one. Of course, you don't because you got a Glock, but this is for anybody who's doing IPSC. Know your gun, know your holster, know your gear. It's so important.
Yep, couldn't agree more.
Beauty. All right, let's move on to this next one from Adriel. Take it away, Owen.
He says, I've been listening to the show since it began, and I was wondering if you had thought of doing a show on which IPSC pistols you view as the quote-unquote best cheap options and quote-unquote best money is no object options. We've got somewhat different opinions and prices compared to the U.S., and maybe some of the other listeners would love to hear about which handguns you'd choose for the different classes and why. So
I think what we're going to do is we actually have an IPSC show coming up, don't we? Do we have an expert coming on?
Yeah. I can go real quick on this. Glock for production or SR9 for production, Glock 35 for standard, and that's it for your cheap options for those two categories. If you want money.
Yeah, there's no cheap option for option. For open, there's no cheap option.
For open, option. No cheap option for open.
That's a tongue twister.
If money is no option for production, you're going to go with a Tanfoglio or a high-end CZ Shadow Gun. For standard, you're going to go with an STI or an Infinity. And for open, you're going to go, like, the money is no object gun would be the Tanfoglio Gold Cup Extreme. It's $6,700. Or if you're really loaded and have more money than brains, you'll have a custom gun builder build you a custom open gun. And you'll probably pay $7,000 or $8,000 for one.
What about the Grand Power guns we were talking about a while ago?
Money is they're not.
Where do they fit in? Are those more middle of the road kind
of? I'd say they're middle of the road. They're the best of both worlds. They're hammer fired and polymer, so they're not entry level and they're not STI either. But
they're good guns from what we've seen so far.
Yeah, I think they're probably as good as the high end guns without the price tag. So they're definitely worth looking at.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. All right, yeah, and we are going to be doing an IPSC show coming up here soon, so make sure you tune in for that, and we'll cover more of that topic, I'm sure. This next one comes to us from David. He writes, thanks for all you do. Keep doing everything you can for those you help in need. I think he's talking about the charity shoot there, so thank you, David, for that. He says, can you talk? Sorry that we help, because we apologize for everything, too, because we're Canadians, right?
Yeah, I'm sorry we're trying to help.
Sorry about that. Yeah, no. he says, can you talk about the 357 SIG, pros and cons of reloading? And he's running the 357 SIG in his Glock 31. He says, I like mine, but I'm starting to question my decision on purchasing it. Thanks, David from Texas. Well, David, I have to say, I love the 357 SIG. I've never shot one. I've never reloaded one. But it's a cool round from everything I've read on the internet.
I've shot one. I've shot one, and Jason Christensen was shooting one at Mag 40 in Utah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure why, and it was a Glock 31, but he's given up on it and moved into something else. Well, actually, I do know why. He didn't shoot it as well as other guns. It's a snappy, snappy round. So, David, if you shoot it well, stay with it. If you don't shoot it well, leave it. That's about all I can say about that. As far as reloading, you can buy a specialized die that'll turn 40 Smith & Wesson brass into 357 SIG brass. And that 40 brass is a lot more readily available than factory 357 SIG brass, so you're keeping your cost down. It is a neck-down cartridge. It is high pressure. The brass does not last forever. I've internet horror stories of the neck going down the barrel with the round. So keep track of your brass and how many times you use it so you can figure out how many reloads you get out of it. That's about it, really. I'm with Matthew. I think it's an absolutely fantastic caliber.
If we could carry up here in Canada, 357 SIG would be on my list of possible calibers that I would carry. And while it may not be a day-to-day urban carry, it would definitely be something that I would consider myself safe with out in the woods against the black bears.
Absolutely. The ballistics are insane.
Mm-hmm.
But it all comes down to it. I wouldn't move away from it, David, if you shoot it well. If you shoot it well, why leave it? Especially if you're reloading for it. You can carry, you're in Texas, buy yourself some quality factory self-defense ammo, practice with it so you know what to expect, keep some on hand, but then practice with your reloads for everyday plinking so that you're proficient with that firearm.
Yep, I couldn't say it better myself.
Yeah, you could.
This next one comes to us from Spencer. He says, as you can see from the pictures, well, listeners, look up to the microphone a little bit better. Here's the pictures.
He says, can hear an AK.
You can hear an AK. Yeah, this year was all about AKs, except when it was about other stuff. One of the nice things about being single is that the Christmas presents you buy for yourself are almost exactly what you wanted. I love how he puts almost in there, because sometimes, you surprise yourself? You just kind of close your eyes and grab something off the shelf? I don't know. Anyway,
I kind of
this
think
year...
of, you know, when he writes that, I think of, you know, Mr. Bean skit, you know, where he...
The turkey
does the
on
present,
his head?
Buys a present for himself. No, he buys a present and wraps it all up, you know, and has the card that he writes to himself and puts it through his own mail slot.
I don't know if I'm proud or ashamed to say I have that DVD set.
I like that show. I remember that one. Anyway, this year, Spencer continues on, I wanted to round out my AKs, so I went for the Goldilocks trio shown below the tree. And we'll have to get this picture posted up on Facebook, I guess. So he has an AK pistol, which is an IO Ink Hellpup based on the Polish receiver. The AK with the underfolding stock is a pretty standard Bulgarian parts kit. And the one with the carry handle and bipod is built from a Romanian AES-10B RPK kit. So that's really cool. I got them all on pre-Christmas deals too, so I have to say the gun panic of 2013 is officially over. Now if we could just get some 22. Other than the AKs, I finally got my tax stamp for my short-barreled AR, 7.5 inches. Owen, how long did it take you to get your tax stamp for your 7.5-inch barrel?
What tax?
Don't wait for it?
I can start building that one now. He says, I've been running the Adams Arms piston upper as a pistol while I was waiting, so it shouldn't be a big deal to cut over. I also put in for two more suppressors. Yup, I'm hooked, he says. I love using my 5.56 suppressor now, so a 22 and a 30 cal version seemed like the right thing to do. My dealer tells me that because he can do these via e-form now, it should only take about 3 months instead of 9 months. So that's cool. I'm glad it's speeding up the process for you there a little bit.
There's my squirrel moment. Owen, you need a heavy buffer for your 7.5-inch barrel. Not that buffer I gave you. That's crap.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You got to go with a heavy buffer on a piston-length barrel.
So he should use a rock? Oh, no, wait. You saw a rock.
That's right. We're talking pistol-length rifles, and he's
playing to me. It makes sense. It was a good squirrel. Why.
Because of the amount of gas that comes through, the light buffer. Just they cycle better with a heavy buffer. It slows down the cyclic rate. You don't get reliability issues.
Yep, I'd have to agree with that based on the very limited experience that I have with the 10.5-inch barrel versus or the 11.5-inch barrel versus the 16.5. Going from carbine length to rifle. No, wait, what did I do? I went from carbine length to mid length, right?
Yes.
So and, much heavier is it?
Well, there's your standard length. And then your standard weight and heavyweight buffers. How much heavier? I don't know.
It's in the like ounces. Like it's not much.
Yeah, there's
very little. Like you won't notice a difference. Like it being in the gun, you wouldn't be able to tell if it has a heavier or a lightweight.
Exactly. Yeah. But when I was ordering my parts, when I was going to do a 7.5-inch build before Christmas, I called the Brownell people and I spoke to their tech department, and they're like. I said, okay, I'm building this gun, and I hear I need a different weight buffer. Which one do I need? He said, well, you need a heavy, but we sell pistol kits. And I'm like, well, you know. So okay. Explained how I wasn't building a pistol, I was building a rifle. And he said, no, you can't do that. You need a tax stamp. I'm like, no, I can do whatever I want. And then I explained, you guys can have whatever length barrel you want, no tax stamp. I'm like, yep, but we got to take it to a gun range only. And he said, for a second there, it sounded like you guys had freedom.
Yeah. So, not quite.
Yeah. Sorry. Carry on.
No problem. He continues on, I'm especially looking forward to the 22 can, since I have a bunch of different rifles and pistols that I can use that on. The 30 cal will probably just stay on the Ruger Gunsight Scout, although I'm tempted to try it on the Vepr 7.62x54 RAK that I built out earlier this year. Or maybe even the VZ-58 clone. I hate this guy. Gosh. He says, one last thing. Everyone knows that Frodo couldn't fly an eagle in to destroy the ring.
It wasn't Sauron, Frodo.
Sauron would have blasted him out of the sky, so they had to sneak in instead. Now, once Sauron was defeated, the skies were clear and the eagles could fly them back out. Those hobbits think strategic, not tactical. Anyway, hope all is well, he says, and I hope that he had a great Christmas and New Year's. Spencer in Smyrna, and he goes, oh, and Trevor, it's still a 1911. And then he has like a PPS here. Sorry I gave those Browning Museum souvenirs back at Mag 40. Looks like they were contagious. So I don't know what he's talking about there, but anyway.
Yeah, he gave us me, you, and Andrew.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
So. Anyway.
Anyway, it's not Frodo, it's Bilbo. I can't believe nobody called me on that. We call ourselves nerds.
I don't even like that.
I don't even know what the reference is to, so. Like, I don't I remember talking about Lord of the Rings.
You didn't. Matthew and I were making fun of you for being on a date with your wife, which you got us back by saying, at least I can get a date.
Right.
And you were gone to The Hobbit. And I'm like, The Hobbit doesn't need to be 3 hours long. They just need to call up the Eagles right away.
And so you went and saw it tonight, and that's why the show's late. So you want to blame somebody for the show being late this week? It's Trevor's fault.
I'm just saying. His name is Bilbo. Why we got to get all defensive?
It's a different movie.
It's not a different movie.
I don't even understand the question. Let's move on to this email from Marcel.
Eagles home.
I'm going to hang up on you two.
Fusilier. Hi, guys, and Happy New Year. I did send you the cast 9mm projectiles. Actually, I still have the bucket that he sent this stuff in. Give us the brass and the projectiles. Anyway, I did send you guys the cast 9mm projectiles and the 9mm brass a while ago, but didn't send you the 30 caliber Nosler projectiles you mentioned in the December 30th podcast. Matthew, did you not know Matthew and I did a show while he was here?
Yeah, he knew. He just didn't listen.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
He said, you'll have to find someone else to thank. For what it's worth, I'm still using the SS pin tumbling method and still loving it. So stainless steel pin tumbling method. So for anybody who's not familiar with that, it's wet tumbling. It's water with stainless steel pins instead of a dry media. But I've discovered that the resulting brass is so clean, it can hang up a little on the powder charging mouth flaring stage on the Dillon Square Deal B. And it's true. It happens. It's only happened really bad with 45 ACP on my Dillon 650. The brass is so clean, it's like factory clean, but it's also dry, I guess, that when you resize it and put a powder charge into it, and that station that bells the case. Oh, and you're familiar with the 650, so you know what I'm talking about here. And Matthew, you've used mine enough to know that there's
sure, a station, we'll go with that.
Well, there's a station on the 650 that puts gunpowder into the empty brass, and that same station opens the mouth of the case up a little bit, flaring it so that you can place a bullet on it without the bullet falling off as you pull it up into the die to press the bullet in or seat the bullet. They get stuck. When you try and pull the handle down, the brass is actually stuck on that bell. That resizes, that opens the mouth of the case up on. So I've experienced that as well, Marcel. It took a while to figure out what was going on, but now I use a little imperial sizing die wax on the flaring die to help the brass slide off easier. Have a great new year. Keep your muzzle pointed downrange, your grouping small, and the authorities off your back. Cheers, Marcel Boudreau, aka Fusilier.
Nice.
Now those 30 caliber Nosler projectiles?
Yep.
Didn't those come from Toby?
No. Toby sent me a bunch of 223 or 224 actually, projectiles.
Oh, okay.
He sent me some 40 grain, some 50 grain stuff. No, there's a listener that sent out a cigar box full of 308 bullets, and there was some 180 grain, and I think it was all mostly 180 grain, 165, and that 165 stuff has proven to be the most accurate in my TAC-21 build. But the 180 grain was great for just general planking. It still grouped well. I mean, I was able to shoot a figure 11 in the nose at 200 meters, and that's where I wanted to hit it. So it's pretty fine as well.
Well, did you look up another iTunes review for us, Trevor?
I'm sorry, I didn't. I didn't get to the notes at all over the break.
Horrible.
I know.
Apparently there were some good ones. I don't know, though, because I haven't been on there in a while. But Trevor found some that we'd overlooked, apparently, because they were on the U.S. feed instead of the Canadian feed. So he's going to try to get those to you next week, I guess.
Yes, since Matthew said he will, he will.
All right. Well, shout-outs then.
Yeah, Paul Athrop. You are Paul Athrop. That's all. That's like, it needs to stop, Paul. It needs to stop.
Yeah.
And I got a shout-out to Mark, who put me as the star role of the Unnecessary Force movie trailer.
Now, that was epic. That was amazing. He did one of those jib-jab e-cards.
Oh, yeah.
And where you can put people's faces in and make them do crazy. Yeah, Owen is this, like, sword-slinging maniac on some police force which uses unnecessary force for everything. One of the lines is, do you have to use unnecessary force all the time? He's like, is there any other kind?
Yeah. He's like Dirty Harry on steroids.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it's a real Clint Eastwood real Clint Eastwood kind of voice and line. Yeah.
Yeah, but if I was in fact your supervisor, Owen, that's not how I would have behaved. I would have been like, only $300,000 damage this time? What's wrong with you?
Work on that. Get that up there. Yeah, and I'm going to just retract that shout out because he put Jewel and I on the park bench in the middle of the city that got blown up. Yeah. So we got killed off.
And Christina was like, all right, there's Amy. Where's Jewel? What's the deal? Why? How come I'm not in this thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Mark, you got to do another one and put Christina in this time. Maybe he couldn't find her on the internet.
Maybe. Maybe she hasn't been around long enough.
Don't worry, Christine. Next time, you it can be you and Trevor on the park bench getting blown up.
Perfect. Somebody's got to get blown up. Yep. Anyway.
What are you talking about? You were hacking a tree to pieces.
That was funny.
That was like...
Tree murderer.
Speaking of cutting down a whole lot of trees, Owen and I went camping this weekend.
No, you didn't.
We did. Yes, well, we went camping all night. We stayed out all night because it was after midnight that we decided to pack it in and head back to the house.
So what was the deciding factor? Did something fall off or was it just like...
No. Minus 36 was pretty much the deciding factor.
It was the realization that to pull it off, we were going to have to sit beside the fire and feed it sticks.
All night
with no sleep.
So another long, drawn-out ending.
Yeah, and we're not even done yet. Here's the ending now. So
we haven't even started the ending.
Yeah, now this isn't the end. This isn't even the beginning of the end. But
shout
perhaps
out,
this is
the end
of the beginning. The Winston Churchill quote, come on, where's your history?
The only one I know from him that matters is about the golf course being a willful and deliberate misuse of a rifle range.
I like it. Anyhow, be sure to join one or both of our national firearms associations. The CSSA and the NFA both do fantastic things for gun owners in Canada, and it's very important that we support them to make sure that we continue to keep the privileges that we do. They are our rights, of course, but they're not recognized by law, so that's why we call them privileges here in Canada.
Yeah, that makes sense. God gives them to us, but the government
doesn't recognize them.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Huh. Anyway, go check us out on the Gun Owners of Canada forum. We post a link to our show there, and we have discussions there and whatnot. We are on Facebook. Go like us. We are at 904 likes, which is phenomenal, and I can't thank you guys enough for pulling that off for us. I mean, when we started asking for likes, we were at like 200 and something, and now we're at almost 1,000, so that's fantastic.
And I'm trying to convince these two jokers to do some sort of, contest for when we get to 1,000 likes, but I can't talk them into it. So if you listeners would like us to give you something when we get to 1,000.
Other than a hard time and harsh criticism.
Other than a hard time, email the show, email Trevor and Matthew on their personal emails and start bugging them and telling them that you want something from them.
That's so. Right. My cell phone number is, and I'm going to give Owen's cell phone number now.
Well, let's not do that again.
Yes. Yeah, slamfireradio@gmail.com is how you can get a hold of us. Also, please be sure to check out all the other great shows on both the Reno Viola Outdoor Web Radio Network, which features dozens of Canadian-based outdoor podcasts, as well as the Crusader Podcast Network, which features... Well, and even Baker's Dozen of great American and Canadian pro-gun podcasts. So lots of good shows on both. Check them out. Let them know that you're listening and let us know that you're listening there. And, I don't know, listen and take somebody shooting and somebody's Ron Burgundy. And look, a rock.
We're out.
So if you have any comments or questions for the show, please send an email to slamfireradio@gmail.com. Now go grab a gun and shoot something. When the talking is over, it's time to get a gun.